what kind of guy are
you? He been removed over the years. Who see signs that path works well in the informal settlement? You come across some yellow overalls that path works well. I think we should rather be proud of this department. Like other departments, there are areas of improvement. Of course, you improve if you see the weakness, then the chance of improvement are there. So the first thing, you must realize where you are not very strong and work towards correctness. Not remain in the same area forever as if you were meant to be like that. There was a singer from one of the provinces, and he had a popular song which says in Kosa Lulu, "Wota Nje," which means I'll remain what I am. So we want our department to remain that way. Areas that must improve must be improved. The portfolio committee's duty is to assist by pinpointing some of these areas. There are other institutions such as AG and many other institutions that have departments to say, hey, here and there, be reasonable. But if you ignore everybody, you ignore portfolio members, you ignore AG, you ignore almost everybody, then that becomes a problem. That becomes a problem. So I'm quite optimistic that public works must become better and better. Of course, public works work with many stakeholders. So which means the rules must be more clearer, more stricter, and people who must monitor those stakeholders, if they are playing the game accordingly, must do that. I am repeatedly warning people not to expect God to do work for themselves, because he's not a member of our work. He is only doing monitoring like we are doing. Now to expect God to do work that you must do is unfortunate. So we must work. Let's monitor if contractors doing what they are contracted to do. Let's ensure also the small contractors are empowered, are given space, are given jobs. Let's avoid giving one or two or three contractors, all the contracts, when others are not getting the job. It's not fair. In fact, South Africa is a country, in terms of the creation of God, it's a rich country. All of us can be in a better situation if the economy can be shared properly. So we can't say when we don't share economy, but it is the will of God. So those that are in control, which means the departmental officials, please ensure that the contractors, the small ones and the big ones, they all share. You must not have one contractor that takes 20 contracts in one province. We have many others that are not getting anything. They are likely to get one. have received that one they are getting. They are not paid for 6 months. These stories must not become a norm. And these things happen, but I'm saying you stand a chance of winning a problem if you identify it. At least you have quite experienced portfolio members here who are able to raise this point. So if you take note and also do your own work, because you have different roles as well. In fact, see if indeed we all bring what we must do. So we will change South Africa. Already, if you look at the positive sides, there are a lot of good things as a country we have done. There are a lot. Many a time we tend to look at their weaknesses only. We don't look at achievements. That is usually a mistake. So it's important that find time to look at your achievements. Because there's no department in South Africa that has no achievements, no department. So we're one country that indeed is appreciated by other countries. I think I'm on record with the that I think we must be honest. But because that will keep us going if we appreciate the good things, and then it will motivate you to do even more. But if you think we're not doing that much, when we do it this much as a country, so it would be not fair to ourselves. So ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, those were my opening and welcoming remarks. More welcome. So, and I hope because I'm still new, I still need to know names to and put names to the faces. Before we give the time, we will deal with their faces now. I'll request that we maybe introduce ourselves, those other stakeholders who are not always with them here, so that we know who is here. And let's deal with apologies. Our Secretary Mala, can you give us the apology?
Thank you. Two apologies. One apology is from the MSA, so we have been asked because you have been in the Alcanti table for the quarterfinal. The second apology from the Secretary of our office was one of the HMDG, who was also not trying to do the history of the production of Victoria. Next apology.
Honourable members, from your side, Honourable Masera.
Thank you very much.
The problem of meeting here.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and representatives from the department. I'm going to attend, I'm sure with the Honorable Adam, another meeting at 12 o'clock. We'll be meeting at 12 o'clock. Bye bye.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. I am meeting at half as well, but I'm actually going to quarter to 12, as I'm still going to prepare myself for the next meeting. It was known that we had to meet at 4 past 12, so at half past 12. So I would like to be excused at the end of 45. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. chair, the apologies of the minister and deputy minister who are going to be in the committee. The unfortunate is the thing that's proceeding in the last meeting of the committee. And of course, the DG has always had to go back and present the minister in another commitment. I've received yet a delegation from outside the country. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I take it we have received all the apologies and accept them. We then move quicker to the introduction before we hand over to the department. I think we have ample time. We must save time. It would be good if we finish by quarter to five. It would be good. So, not on the presentation of the fine, but I will still want the officials to introduce themselves. We usually start with the one who's leading, Lucia, who will then introduce and then give others to introduce themselves.
My name is Alexander Duclair, I'm the DDG responsible for intergovernmental coordination.
Good morning. My name is Martin Mbuti. I'm newly appointed DDG responsible for construction for the community.
Your name?
Martin Mbuti.
Good morning. My name is Melanie Spelina. I'm Chief Director General of the Public Health Service.
Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Mona Jabobasa, I'm the Chief Director of Intergovernmental Relations.
Good morning, sir, and honorable members and colleagues. My name is Tando, my surname is Obama, Minister of the Department of Affairs.
Good. Waiting more time, I think we know who's here now. I'll head over to the
find for yourself on the best way forward. And I'm happy that part of the introduction of the chapter is a clear indication or reflection of some of the current improvements in the department. And certainly, chapter, there are some centers of excellence in the department. And of course, there are areas where there are still gaps, and we need to pull together and make sure that we close those gaps and become a better department going forward. And we're working very hard to look into those areas and where there are gaps. And again, we are looking very critically at the program that we develop and present it to the committee on our way forward with regard to the AG findings. And in this regard, again, we will also be ready to let ourselves on the fact that we will be able to present all. I will request a reference center in the department who's raising the issues to present, and then, of course, we'll then allow the CIP to follow through. Members will realize that there will be far more detail with regard to what the CIP will be presenting, because that's where most of the interaction is with regard to the area of what that group will present. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you.
Good morning again. The program seems to be as an important to brief the Portfolio Committee on the proactive initiatives that we are inviting as a department to improve women participation or to increase the rate of women participation in the construction industry. I'm sure the presentation go up there, but you know, the presentation was sent, but I can just talk on the presentation. I did that. But in the meantime, I can just continue to say that. The students of Western have actually been, like you said, Chair, that we have actually identified a weakness in promotion of women's participation in the construction industry. But so far, recently there have been a lot of efforts that have been put in place. One being there is a review of policies that the department is working on to ensure that there is a gender lens, to ensure that there is. There is definitely something that will enforce the department, or when we can ensure that we are able to monitor the participation of women construction industry. One of the act is the Public Works Act itself is under review, and we are working with the policy branch to ensure that the element of the public is very clear, and we are able to especially on women.
Or always speak to the mic because we really want to hear.
Okay.
We now don't have your presentation. I'm not very happy about that. I hope we'll start the things in my office. But we don't put that we don't have it today. I hope people must know when they are doing well. We must not call the boys into the department. These are the you are saying you have set the presentation. So now it's my staff that they thought God would do it. Think of people who think things will be done by God. Don't know they like it. And we are paying them every month. But now they put God. The thing that must be sorted. So I hope people must go. Yeah, what is called behind the scene where by the time we start, everything is done, you don't realize what people must present. That, it didn't connect. Not very heavy. So by time, I hope they are working on it. But because we don't have time, something that should not have happened. People should have connected. You can't have the best condition. If we have people that are serious about their work, maybe continue, but it be clearer the line so that we hear. So there is a document you are working on so that the members also are following you from the document. So, okay. Yeah, no, don't forget
away.
This mic is not that strong. Yeah, those are that strong, but this one needs to be closer to your lips. Please, so that members can hear you.
Okay.
Jefferson.
Okay, last minute.
Yeah, no, thank you, Chair. While the technician is here, haven't they got lapel mics? It's much easier to use the lapel mics, and you can just okay, thank you, Chair.
Okay, like I said, other things should have been done before the meeting. So, people must really do things at the right time. Now the presentation must take place, so those that they didn't do their part, they must know that they didn't do their part. Okay, if I can request again, just put your mic closer to your mouth. Okay?
I think I can understand the problem.
And don't hold it on the mouth. Don't hold it where it must pick your voice. Don't hold it there. Okay.
Okay. I think I've got it now. I think that's enough. I'm using my hand to do this.
I think she usually takes control of things that come close to her head. That's unparliamentary.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. But we must still hear you.
We're on the first slide. This is just a proper statement that you are all aware of. We recently had a that we think is actually acknowledged how women are underrepresented in the built environment profession, and we are also aware of the statistics that we have from CIDB that women are not really participating as we expect in the construction industry. This is just a list of the legislative framework that we use to ensure that women participate. We are on our objects. I'm not going to go through that for saving time. I would just mention a few problems that you all know. The Sarasa Musashi that is characterized by a very slow transformation. There is a limited number of women-owned construction enterprises in the upper grades of the CIDB list of contractors. As you all know, that most women are concentrated in grade one and grade two in the CIDB register. There is very little movement going forward in the Department of Public Services. We're just going to give some of the details, the practical details. For CID leaders, some will present them in detail. I'm not going to go through that. But just to say that having noticed that as a Department of Public Works, we are aware of the challenges. I'm going to skip this, the next slide, which is basically that CID is also going to present also. I think that it should be better arranged to do that. But I'm going to skip to the digital application slide number 10. We, as the Department of Public Works, we are going through a review of policies and regulations. I will say that the Public Works white paper itself is going to go through a review. To ensure that there is a gender test, to ensure that the issues of empowerment and transformation are clearly defined, so that we can be able to start working intentionally. Because sometimes, if you don't do the things intentionally, it becomes, when we take for granted that automatically women will be empowered, or the black people will be empowered, it does not help us. So we also reviewing the CBD Act is also going through review. The CIDB Act itself, we are also embarking on an empowerment, property empowerment policy, which is also another a new policy which is very clear on empowerment of women in the industry. And I'll mention the CIDB, the supply chain management policy. It's also it's going through a review, but this is going to be aligned with the current Act, which is very clear about the 30% to BEE, which would definitely include women. But what we are doing as a department, we are actually going through and resuscitating the Contractor Incubator Program, which is one of the programs that we would be embarking on to ensure that women participate. And what we have done is that we have actually negotiated with the Advisory Council that within this incubator program, 60% must be women, and we have already embarked on that. What the advertisement went in all the regions, we realized that there was a problem that we did not make the target, which not meet the women as we had hoped. And so another initiative that I want to mention is the DPW Women Public Investment Council, which was established in 2016. The DPW Advisor Council, DPW Women Empowerment Advisor Council, is made up of women in construction that's from South. It's made up of women in the built environment profession. It's made up of women in property. This advisor is a ministerial council which the Minister MC launched in his tenure. And this advisor person has been given the mandate to advise the department and to monitor progress on the implementation of the commitments that they have made on the Department of Women. And Mr. Yatanda here is one of the members. He was actually on behalf of CIDB, and they played an important role whereby we've got different women from different sectors who are able to advise. But sometimes in the department, you tend to think that we don't understand the actual problems out there. So this forum meets on a quarterly basis, and we share ideas, but we also sit with the minister, we sit with the DG, and advisory department. We have also engaged different branches on, and set targets with different branches on what needs to be done, and we're hoping that we'll be able to monitor, because they have been given the mandate by the minister to do that. Another initiative that the department is about to is to establish or to appoint gender champions in head office branches. We
Because what actually happened is that in the department actually, what can be the problem is that we tend to think that the department, actually not only department of public works, we tend to think that the empowerment of women must be done by gender unit. Because you know that gender unit is all the departments that the cabinet that all the departments must have gender unit. But you realize that gender unit are just there to coordinate engines and monitor and reporting. But the actual implementation is done in branches in the business. So you find that it becomes a problem because everybody goes back to that business and does business as usual and not necessarily concentrating on what needs to be done. So what we did as a department, we ensured that each and every branch should have a gender champion. Because the gender unit will be very few people who have been actually put even under corporate services to deal with human resources issues. So we have actually noticed that any department that this has actually not helped the department to improve its efforts in empowering women. And what they have done now for this year, I think it is one achievement that the department has done. They have put the gender unit in the DG's office. So, and which means that then the gender unit will have an eye view of what is happening on the branches and will be also with the support of the DG, because it was also a problem. And when they would expect that when it comes about to our gender, it's all about implementing equity, about how the women are in the department. But not necessarily influencing what the department should do into the sector itself as an empowering women in the sector. Like I said, I think I will just give the CID initiatives that are here so that we avoid duplication. But yes, we did have the information, but because we over 60 CID because of time management, I think this is what we have done. So,
thank you very much. We are in our hands at the DGG. If there's anything you want to add to what Mr. Mela has said, but I'm here to attend women leaders who have given an opportunity to tell us where the issues are. I'm quite happy with slide 9. Where challenges are clearly indicated. Because we must not hide challenges for us to correct. Thank you very much. So, who's given the mic now? Okay, you introduce yourself again. Is that the chairperson?
Yes.
Okay, so introduce again in the mic.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Lufuno, from the Nigerian board. Let me just say that we really are quite pleased that the issue of women empowerment is something that the committee is interested in. We definitely, from the CID, we are, for this problem, because it's very critical. I think wherever you go, wherever you look in this country, the leadership in terms of women is still very much wanting. But from our side, as much as we are very enthusiastic, like in everything else, the changes that we are doing in the CIGB to advance smaller and medium-sized companies, this particular area is also very much interested. Here is a challenge, though, which I would like honorable members to note. It's very critical for what you're stating. And this ties up with the Act that she mentioned. The CIDB Act, for anyone who is cared to look at it, is quite an Act that does not reflect the modern economies and modern ways of doing it. Very sort of it attempted to combine and to everything that needed to be included in terms of construction. So it is not necessarily a criticism. I am pointing out that the reason why we need to be redoing the net. Having said, what is the CIDB? CIDB will simply register companies, we monitor, and that's really what we do by and large. That's really what they do. But I think the confusion comes in, which this is where I want us to know, that You cannot be a minister, monitor me and so on, and at the same time play a role of developing companies. The two are not the same. Because how do you do that at the same time develop? There's a big tension there that we pointed out. You know, this is where the confusion comes in terms of the act. I'm not saying we're trying to do that, but it is an issue there that we sorted out at a technical level in terms of the act, so that we're very clear in terms of what the mandate is. So having said that, I'm going to ask Madam Linda to take us through our programs, monitoring, and what we're doing. Thank you very much,
Thank you very much. Thank you very much,
Chairperson. Thank you, Chair. Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Nancy, and other honorable members from the Portfolio Committee. And we have here with us the team from the CIDC, just to reiterate. We were led by our Chairperson, Mr. Mpulo Lemukani. And we also have the Chairperson of the Social Ethics and Stakeholder Committee, Dr. Natalie Skeppers. We also have the acting CEO of the CIDC, Mr. Ntende Mokwalume. We have the Program Manager, Construction Industry Performance, Dr. Rodney Milford. And we have the Program Manager, Construction Registered Services, Mr. Ibrahim Muller. And I am Lindewa Nyakaza, who is a member, a board member, and a member of the Registration and Regulatory Compliance Committee of the CIDB Board. We thank you again for offering us this opportunity to come and present to the Portfolio Committee. So our presentation, we will briefly look at the National Construction Contractor Grade Register from Grade 1 to Grade 9. And we'll look at our strategy as the CIDB to upgrade and ensure access lower grade contractors, especially those in rural areas. And these issues are responding to the questions that were sent to us by the Portfolio Committee. We will also look at detailed operating methods and criteria, and also the breakdown of lower grade contractors from grade 1 to 4 across provinces countrywide in various construction projects for each municipality. And we'll also briefly look at the reasons and remedial actions for the 140,000 job losses within the first and third quarter of 2017 in the construction industry. Chairperson, maybe in case you are confused as to how we are progressing, we have sent the electronic record. You can look at the hard copy in the meantime, just to save time, but you are busy collecting. Thank you. Honourable members, I think we have mentioned before, and the Chairperson of the Committee, the CIDB is a critical strategy. So how we then register contractors, the activities or responsibilities related then to our register are mandated in terms of the Act. So in terms of Chapter 3 of the CIDB Act, the objectives of the contractor register are to firstly support risk management in the tendering process. And we do this by grading contractors using the financial capabilities, but also looking at the work that they have done. These are just basic capabilities or measures that we can track, but municipalities or any other entity or department of the state at various scales of government can add their own functionality. Mm-hmm. And we do this because public sector look at the CNC register whenever now they tender, and they link that to whatever requirements are specified in the tender, and then they can add their own functionality. We also second ties to this point. In our register, assist clients to reduce the administrative burden, both the clients and the contractors, because already we've created the contractors. So when clients package tenders, they will also use their systems that work with on them to ensure that if they want a grade 3 contractor or if they want grade 7 contractor, already they can link that or specify in the tender document. And then contractors will know then who is capable to apply for what job. And we also support clients through our register to facilitate sustainable growth and transformation of contractors and enable effective access by the emerging sector. Here, honourable members and honourable chairperson, I would like to especially that our register on its own or by itself does not do those things, but it enables any client to look and to harness information that will assist them to facilitate growth and transformation of contractors in the industry. And fourthly, we develop standards and best practices, and these also help clients to look at measures they can use across the board to see who has done what, because we specify the standards and the minimum standards and the practices. We also enable access to the private sector in addition to all public sector clients at various stages of government. So our register is ready and openly available to the public, and people can just go in there and look at the grades of contractors that they can use for their work. We also provide information on the size, distribution, nature and development of contractors. And here, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Member, we have only looked focused on growth that is yet to come, but now we are also looking at expanding our register so that we can also examine who is expanding their work to look at or to also perform other specialist classes of work. For example, you may have a contractor that is growing as a civil engineering contractor or general building contractor, but now we are finding that some contractors are expanding their activities and they also perform other specialist classes of work like being electrical contractors and so on. Now, this is on page 6 and there on the on the slide, that is, yeah. And we have statistics of their ownership. Now, when you look at this as honorable members, you would see that there's high percentages of black ownership. And yet, we are talking about the construction industry that is not transformed, where there's still low levels of black ownership. And I will explain that seeming anomaly. What we have done to get to those statistics is we have captured those numbers. When people apply, they indicate their share or their ownership in terms of ownership and managerial involvement in the company, and merely capture those. But we have realized that because we also included listed companies. But we also realized that those numbers may be corrupted because your Black Economic Empowerment Act also and all these indices were aware that there's a lot going on there. There's fronting, there's opacity in terms of ownership, and even in the construction industry, you have companies that own companies. So you may have a big established contractor that has subsidiaries that are black owned, and it's part of its own company. And so we are looking, we've done now a desktop auditing of companies, but it needs to go deeper, you know what I mean, than that. We need to look perhaps even at peers in that corporate day to understand who owns who. And we have been discussing that maybe we would need to work with Central Africa and the ITC to understand the dynamics of that. And when we look, for example, at rent spend of construction works, that picture changes because we find that the money actually goes to a few companies. But even that one, it's difficult, it has its own complexities. Because again, even in that situation, municipalities or various entities or structures of the state don't comply, and you will see all those details when my colleagues present further. So we are dealing with that, and these are the issues the chairperson was talking to earlier when he mentioned some of the loopholes in the Act, and what we've been doing then, or what we've been working on to try to review the CIPD Act so that we also tighten on regulation compliance and on this registration of contractors. So even then, with the statistics of women ownership, even though you see that there's lower percentages, and even more lower even on the other specialist classes of work, and as you go higher up the grade, they are still also influenced by the same dynamics we discussed regarding black ownership. So you find that there's still a lot of issues there, you know, with the fronting, the various information and events. So, Chairperson, with that being said, I will hand over then to my colleagues to continue the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You will introduce yourself, gentlemen.
Honourable Chairperson and honourable members, Rodney Mulford, Program Manager, Construction Industry Performance. I'm going to address the topic which was requested, CRDB strategy or Public Works CRDB strategy to upgrade and ensure access to lower grade contractors, especially those in rural areas. And in doing so, I have to start off and building on what the Chairperson said, we perform an administrative function which is given in the Act. The work that we do applies to all contractors, whether they be woman-owned, black-owned, youth-owned, or whatever, urban or rural. However, much of our work can be customized for specific applications. Very briefly, in terms of what is our development strategy, we have an approved development strategy by the board, and amongst others, I'm just going to touch very briefly on this, is to implement business advisory services through our provincial offices, which can provide business advice to contractors, and in doing so this is still being rolled out, and we're also looking at expanding the footprint of the provincial offices to reach further contractors. We are also shortly aiming to implement, and there will be a Government Gazette notice on Friday for draft comment, what is referred to as the best practice fee, and the objective of that is that income which is derived through that will be used to support development of contractors and underlying professionals as well. We will be looking at providing mentoring support, we're looking at providing training and accreditation support for management systems, and interventions like that. We do have a board endorsed strategy on that. We are in discussion with various development finance institutions, DFIs, and in particular with CIFA, the Small Enterprise Finance CIFA Association, where we're looking at enhancing the credit available to contractors, specifically small contractors in that area, and those discussions are progressing well. The CIDB, or a lot of contractor development is focused through government, specifically public works and transport related contractor development programs, and there are various models that are used around the country. These fall under the generic of the National Contractor Development Program, and the CIDB has developed and published the guidelines under which contractor development programs should operate. We are accrediting programs which comply with the guidelines. In the past, possibly many programs have not complied fully with the guidelines, and therefore contractor development has not been optimized. And we are ongoing and continually monitoring the performance of contractors, including those within contractor development programs. We will talk in a subsequent presentation about investment in rural areas, and that we'll talk about that later. We are in the process, my colleague Ibrahim Muller is in the process also, but we will be reviewing our grading criteria extensively, looking to see if it meets the needs of the industry, both contractors and clients. But one of the priority activities that we have undertaken is to re-look at the maximum tender value limit that contractors can undertake work to. So currently at the moment, in terms of current regulations, a small contractor, grade 2, can only take work up to 650,000 rand. We are rebasing that because over time inflation has eroded this. We're going to rebase that, and a grade 2 contractor will then be able to undertake, according to our proposal, up to 1 million rand. We will then be annually or regularly updating this so that inflation does not erode. So, honourable members, that is a very brief focus what we're doing, and we will touch on some of these issues in subsequent presentations. And I'm going to hand over to my colleague.
So the first one is that a contractor will need to have a completed a general building project to the value of 900,000 land in order to then work up to 4 million. So if you look at the scope, it says a contractor completing a project could work 4 times the largest project previously completed. And at the grade 4 level, the contractor is required to have available capital, so the value of 200,000 rand. And that 200,000 rand is essentially your net asset value. So it could be the company might be owning a vehicle or two, and when you look at the liabilities there. Or at grade 4, the choice of the turnover. So the flexibility in terms of your lower grade is the contractor doesn't have to strictly meet the available capital and the turnover requirement. Could be the available capital or the turnover requirement. There is another example at the higher grade, which is grade 7. I'll take you just back to the table to show that grade 7 works up to 40 million then. So what would it take for a contract to then be registered at grade 7 in civil engineering? Right, so a contract would need to have completed a civil engineering project to the value of 9 million then. Once again, note that once registered, the contractor then works almost 4 times the largest project completed in 5 years, and the contract is required to then have a net asset value effectively of 4 million rand in order to work up to 40 million, and then an annual turnover of 20 million rand. And there's a few rules related to that. It could be the best turnover over 2 years, it doesn't have to be the immediate turnover preceding the application. Now the register is a public sector register, so all the information there will be access to the private sector. We do, we ask often to get more private sector clients that will look at and come to CDB and say, can you give us, you know, contracts in a certain way, in a certain area which we have certain projects. So that's available for public access in terms of, sorry, private sector access as well. Anybody can access it to basically look for contractors. I think very important also linking to the work of Dr. Goldberg is that one has to show value in the register. So the next phase is actually to build up the performance record of contractors, competency assessments, etc., so that this does become attractive to the private sector as well. Just to move on to the registration methods and some immediate plans ahead. The current registration is conducted to head office and 9 provincial offices. Now, you know, there is a lot of work that CDB is focusing on in terms of those provincial arrangements. And, you know, we do have partnerships with a public health department, etc., in terms of housing and registration services. But there is a reassessment underway in terms of what would be an ideal structure. We focus on head office and selected provincial offices. And it's one area that we are keen to really look at. And then we know the dynamics in the country of certain provinces where the population is located, etc. And one would need to ask, is CADB well placed? Are we in the right area? There's other dynamics, population size, location, size of the province itself, as well as economic activity, also based on that. Linked to the legislation methods and the plans ahead is the organizational design process, which is underway. This is critical. And principally, if contractors want to be able to speak to persons in their area and to be able to get a reasonable assurance related to their grading outcome. And that's something that we are really looking at. The issue of online registration, yes, that's also very key for CABD. And there are several aspects related to registration where contractor would simply want to lodge an annual update or pay a registration fee, update the electrical license, and the contractor would have to drive quite far to get the service. Whereas the online registration should really be able to take pressure off the CADB in terms of administration, but also in terms of assisting contractors in terms of their registrations. Okay, I mentioned the registration criteria previously. My colleagues have also mentioned that, yes, there is a method, which is working in the project works on the tender rating of the adjustment. The contract of all those grades I showed you earlier, those will be increased. And in parallel with that, there's an entire criteria review project that's underway, and a lot of work has been done so far on them. Just to give you a sense, we think those are the main aspects of it, among the many. One is the issue of grade 1 registration, and a study was conducted in terms of grade 1 registration, and one contractor, and what would CNB need to do? The consideration is whether there is any entry level requirements, whether you're giving it an open ended requirement, and looking at all the pros and cons related to that. The second issue is that contractors, Mr. Chandra said that the CNB rated out a paper based, you don't have a registration level registration. And what you find in practice is CNB gets approved by various different scenarios. For example, contractors that are almost reaching liquidation, a contractor who would want to reinvent himself and say, look, just move my grade, I've got 6 GB, I'd like to reinvent myself and I'd like to be under a new name, and you reflect it like that. Often you find that linked to this issue, another dynamic is also foreign companies come to work in the country as well, and the mechanism in terms of how records are transferred. But the reason why we're saying we need to review this is that it is a big area that we need to do in terms of the integrity of the register and also protect the CNB from legal jealousy, but also to accommodate the genuine basis where contractors want to say, can I transfer my records? I want to be a registered contractor, the records are not in my company's name. And it could be for various legitimate reasons, that the company was a close corporation and changed to a private company or sole proprietor that then is growing and decided to formally register and CNB would then be accommodated. The other one is that a big one is really to assess the entire financial and work capability requirements. I did take you through the slide on the examples to say this is the available capital, this is the turnover required, but we're really looking at it against CPS, let's stop on the white page and really look at, is this thing right? Can we go back to the drawing board and say, you know, what else can be done? What can be done differently? So for example, you know, contractor has certain grades, the CNB strictly look at when renewing, you strictly look at those requirements. Is there an interview process? Can CNB do a competency assessment of the contractor? So moving away from just saying, do you have that bullseye figure of 200,000 rand and that, what else can be done? And that's what we're saying, this is the overall, and then we need to think how to do things in a better way, while keeping the intention of the register as a risk management tool and as a framework for development. So that's the what we need to work with here. Also, the classes of work, the legislation classes of work, there is a relook at that in terms of the various classes and what we need to change or improve. For example, sub-classes of work, the trade category, in various other areas. We're also getting approached from client departments where as technology changes and as things change, the classes of work necessitate the reviews. For example, laying on fiber optics and the link with civil engineering. These are big things that CNB is to be considering. In terms of the scorecard, we currently do capture the overall. But the requirement here is that if we say we would like to cover the sub-elements within the so the context would cover, we would like to capture really whatever is being said, condition control, procurement, whatever the elements are. Also, just to say that the CNB does work with the Charter Council. We are registered, you know, harness of resistance we use to track progress in terms of Sukuki, and then we can actually support them better by capturing the information. And yes, to provide the subcontractor registration and then looking at classes of work for trade contractors, where when subcontractors are brought on in particular trade, those could be then also better specified in terms of CNB registration. And what I've shared with you is really just a snapshot of the criteria of the review. There's actually quite a few more elements that are there, but just provide a bigger picture and a bigger scope. I think the important one to give you is that even the financial and work capability requirements need to be looked at. And if we could find a better way to do it, CNB, we are open to that in terms of saying we don't have to be straight-jacketed into the available capital and turnover, we could look at other means to assess complexity as well. So in short, I'd like to hand over back to my colleague of the motor who is just carrying on until the end of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Honourable members, I'm going to address the question that you asked. It's a breakdown of lower grade contractors and
specifically the request was for grades 1 to 4, so those are your very small contractors and your micro contractors in construction projects for each municipality in the country. What I'm going to do, I'm going to first talk about the information that we have. I'm going to highlight that this is the best information we have, but it's not complete, and then I'm going to draw conclusions. I think several references, correctly so, have raised the issue about incomplete information. It is something that we are addressing, but very often, as you will see, we rely on municipalities, clients, whatever the case may be, and this is one of the challenges that we face. Notwithstanding that, I believe the information does provide the correct trends. The source of information to look at how much work is undertaken by contractors and municipalities comes from the Register of Projects, which my colleague spoke about. In terms of the Construction Industry Development Regulations, in the public sector, all projects over 200,000 Rand have to be advertised through our system, and then the registration of tender award must be on our system. And if you've got the registration of tender award, we therefore got the contractor, we know whether they use those, whatever it may be. Because of the limit of the 200,000 Rand, it excludes the quotations system, which falls within grade ones. I need to stress that while we've got a wealth of information in the CIDB registers, it is not complete. If one looks here at the metros, one sees that some metros, but for the city, for argument's sake, when we do our checks, and these are only checks against a certain amount of information, it looks like they are very compliant. But other metro compliance is low, 40%, 50%, 60%. When we get down to local municipalities and the rest of it, we do see that compliance ratios are not what we want. We do monitor this every 6 months. We do report on this at DPW, MinMec Technical, MinMec, and we also send all details to all heads of departments, municipal managers and the like, requesting them to address this issue, and we are taking action against some municipalities. So we can see for municipalities, we're probably around about 30, 40, 50% compliant. On this graph here, this shows, based on the information we have, the percentage of work by RAND value that goes, and I'm focusing on the grade 2 to 4 contractors. The grade 2 to 4 contractors get about 5% of the total value of work in municipalities, provincial aid, national core, and SOE is much lower. So by RAND value, the amount of work accessed by small contractors through prime contracts or principal contractors is of the order of around about 5%. If you look at the next slide, this talks by number of contracts. And municipalities, your grade 2 to 4 contractors are accessing around about a quarter of the number of contracts, but as I've shown, the value of the work is much lower. If one looks in absolute numbers, it appears, turning to the question that was asked, the work accessed by contractors, it appears that round about from municipalities accessing maybe 250 contractors per year are accessing work. Because of the low compliance, you could probably double that or even make it more, but it is certainly not more than 1,000 contracts from municipalities across the whole country that are being accessed by grade 2 to 4 contractors. Grade 1 contractors will be higher than that, but that's within the quotation system. I would also just like to draw your attention to this point here. While we are showing that the value of work accessed by small contractors is small, we also need to recognize that the distribution of contracts across urban, rural, built-up, whatever the case may be, is also very variable. And small contractors, grade 2 to 4 contractors, typically are based in one location. They do not travel between towns or whatever the case may be. And this shows in KwaZulu-Natal, the dark areas, for 5 years, the public sector work, 2 billion rands worth of work was done in the Etiquette or Durban area. If one looks at the area up here, only 200 million rands worth of work was done. And in some areas, the work that was infrastructure development in those areas was less than 100 million rands. So therefore, the opportunities for contractors varies across various areas. And therefore, one expects the numbers that the market supply as well to vary. This is the Eastern Cape, Port Elizabeth, East London area, and then also very little work being done in some of the areas, as one can see there. Chairperson, if I can go then on to the last question that was posed to us, and that is the reasons and remedial actions for reported 140,000 job losses within the first and third quarter of 2017 in the construction industry. At the outset, I must acknowledge and in many ways thank the committee here. That statement there comes from a press report that we produced, a press release which we produced about 3 weeks ago. And those exact words come from that press release. We are continually monitoring not only employment, we're monitoring black ownership, youth ownership, access to work. We are continually monitoring business conditions and the like, and we're reporting on it. And we're acknowledging, and through this, I believe we're acknowledging that this, our reports are getting out. So just to highlight, amongst the issues that we report on, in April, we report on the amount of work spent and the distribution of contractors. In July, we talk about contractor development within contractor development programs and across the whole of the country. We look at the number of upgrades and the like. October is we monitor the state of employment, which was the press release. And then in January, we monitor the state of transformation of the contractor sector and also of the consulting or professional service provider sector. And we'll be more than welcome to, if you request it, we can email these to you as they are published. In terms of employment in the construction industry, I just want to set a bit of a context on which to judge those numbers. The construction industry does account for a reasonably significant contributor to employment. Its construction accounts for around about 10% of total formal and informal employment, so it is a significant sector. That amounts to about 1.5 million people are employed in the formal and informal sector. Regrettably, and what has been highlighted through our press release and what you're seeking information on is during the first two quarters we lost 140,000 jobs. And those job losses is directly related to expenditure. If one looks through StatsSA, the most recent, the quarter two state of the economy, we see in the primary sector, interestingly enough, the agricultural sector grew by 33% because of the good rainfalls. In the secondary sector, construction decreased by 0.5% because of a lack of expenditure, and the only other sector that shrank was in fact government. So one can conclude this is why we see the job losses, because expenditure on infrastructure decreased in that quarter. Ladies and gentlemen, if I can just focus, and maybe don't focus on the numbers here, just focus on the right-hand side. The top row talks about total infrastructure investment in South Africa in 2016 rand. So I've taken inflation out. Government is accountable for around about 55% of total construction expenditure in South Africa. Government is not the dominant player in your residential and non-residential building, but government accounts for about 80% of total expenditure on civil engineering, that is your roads, dams, sewage systems and the like, and it's a very significant component. In today's terms, it's accounting for about 260 billion rand per year. What is more important is the slide I'm showing you now. And in nominal rands, we see government expenditure in civil engineering is projected to fall by 8 billion rand in this financial year in real terms. The economists, some forecasts, and this we use in the industry inside information, is projecting a 2 to 3 billion rand fall in real terms, And even last year, 2016-17, in real terms, that's negative growth. So the growth in infrastructure spending is decreasing, and hence we are seeing the job losses. Now, I want to highlight one other issue. As we there is a reduction in expenditure, there are job losses. But there's also been effective lost opportunities for many years in the construction industry. This shows you here, when it said 2012-02, that's quarter two, this is the municipal year-end, financial year-end, the 24 financial year-end, 2012-2013 financial year-end. If I look at 2016 financial year-end, government, metro, district and local municipalities underspent their capital infrastructure budgets by 13 billion rand. Going back to the Friskers, 13 billion rand. That's a lot of lost job opportunity, more than 140,000 lost job opportunities, a lot of lost transformation opportunities, employment and skills development opportunities. The situation at the provincial level is not as bad. In fact, it was positive in 2016-01, is the end of the first quarter, but we see previously there have been losses, but of a significantly lower level. The information at the national level shows that the expenditure against budget is pretty much on target. So those are significant lost opportunities. What are the conclusions? We know that we are in difficult economic times, both locally and internationally. We know that we do have fiscal constraints, and although the government has published the MTF of around about 850 billion now, rolling on for several years, that represents only a 1.6% nominal growth. And in real terms, government is cutting back on infrastructure spending of around about 5% real, and that means there's going to be 5% job losses. And we also need to highlight when we talk in real here, you can't compare it directly to consumer price index, inflation on food, inflation on transport. This is construction inflation we're talking about. And it is a significant knock-on effect. Key issue which is important is delays in expenditure for various capacity constraints, whatever the case is, there's delays in getting contracts running and off the ground. Underspending in budgets I've spoken about already is a key challenge that we have. And what was mentioned earlier, I haven't said yet, but delays in payment is killing many parts of this industry. So what are we doing? What is the CIDB doing? We're continually monitoring it. I've shown you we're monitoring job losses, I've shown you we're monitoring under expenditure and the like. We do advocate continually, and we thank you for this opportunity to talk here, to reinforce your concerns, to again to provide you with information. We report regularly at Technical MinMec, we produce press releases, we interact with a whole range of government and private sector and stakeholders. We are supporting public sector procurement, primarily supporting the development of capacity in relation to our prescripts, but we are working with National Treasury, who have a very strong focus on providing procurement capacity, especially in the low capacity and medium capacity metropolitan areas, and we are working with them. One of the biggest challenges, if we can get the work to flow in those areas which are not spending their budgets, if we can get the work to flow faster, and if we can get more efficiency out of the rand, and that's what we are aiming to do. We have also produced several guidelines for labor intensive methods and technologies. These guidelines are used in the EPWP, they've been adopted in the EPWP, and we have recently, 2 weeks ago, published the standard for contract participation goals, which standardizes how work can be provided to targeted areas, target communities, targeted groups, and the like. So I think if I can conclude there, and if I can hand over to Theo. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, your conclusion.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As you can see, I am personally stunned every day to see how Denmark's situation is becoming constructive. We all know, basically you can see everywhere, there is just no companies are growing, the economy is doing well, it's not being catered. But where we're sitting, Chairperson, we are nothing but a regulator. That's what we do. We don't offer any jobs to anybody, we don't budget to issue to anybody. We can only encourage municipalities to do things in a way that we encourage them to do, government, but you know, beyond that, we speak to our meeting. And of course, we continue to report some of this, not very interesting numbers, but it is what it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll go back to CDGF concluding remarks. So maybe when it comes to questions. Thank you very much. Honorable members, the time is almost 5 past 11. We have now opportunity to engage with the presentation. So it will be up to you where you want to go. They have covered almost all the questions, but they are capable enough. You can be asking on the last presentation, the first presentation, they will be writing. They are quite skilled, because they will have to answer. Then go to yourself. There's a crux of the matter. We want South Africa to change, reverse the imbalances of the past. Says Act 108 of 1996. Then over to you, whatever members. First, Honorable Pizane, Mr. Pip, Mr. Rader, Mama Masiera. Let's go with those hands for the first time. Honorable Adams, thank you.
President, I think we need a doctor in the usage of the last remark I made, because at this time in South Africa, and that's how I'm forced by this politician to spend my response to this. By the way, it's good to know the truth, and nothing else but the truth, because then there's this arm of the government who can make constructive contributions in order to ease the burden of unemployment, which continues to pay for country. As lawmakers, we have just a responsibility to uplift our country, just as you do on the side of the economy. It's not a game that's exclusively yours to play when it comes to legislation, which has been called the policy to be effective. So we do expect you to bring up as early as possible the legislation that needs to be amended so that we can play a more meaningful role, you know, as is expected by a partner. Questions?
You slide 10, first presentation. My question to you is, given the fact that you're looking at 60% women representation, my initial question was, what percentage of women representation do you have? Now, in the subsequent slide, you did indicate that you're looking at 60%. Now, then my question becomes, support. How are you going to handle the competition with men, men who are already in the industry, if you're pushing for 60% of what I would regard as a relatively new entrance to the industry, that is women. Because there are men who are already there. How are we going to handle the competition? And this tied up with the question of whereby your policy is aimed at women domination in the industry or just gender. Are you pushing for women domination or just gender parity? I would want an explanation for whatever answer you give us. Now, the recent CIDD gives particular steps showing that there is fault in their contractors, because this is an industry that has so far and probably up to now dominated by white groups. Now, do you know what training white males are getting in the industry? You are obviously can't hear me well. Given the fact that this industry has up to now been dominated by whites, particularly white men, are you aware of the training that white contractors in various sectors are exposed to? I'm asking this question because it could be that inadvertently you're setting up black players in the industry to be always playing a catch-up game. Maybe by the time and you're currently playing and training black players in the game, including women, could be that whites are miles ahead, whether they have changed the construction methods or they have improved the construction methods, and as such they are perhaps able to deliver for the same value of money faster, more efficiently. That's why I want to know if you are informed of the kind of training that whites are currently exposed to at the moment. I want to know. How do you incentivize women to join this industry? The reason I'm asking this question to my chair is because I would like for the state of South Africa to focus on the number of games without checking first if we're not luring our black women to an industry over which we've got very little control. You pay late, and you want more women to join a team of contractors that are going to continue to pay late. Have you ever seen a woman when she's supposed to get money from government and doesn't get it? And she's got no members for her car time. You don't want to live with a woman in that situation. Now, you want to know that man, you cannot pay in time. Men who are producible. Why? How do you incentivize women when you are not performing well as government? You say the industry is shrinking on the one hand. But at the same time, you say you want to lure our black women into an industry that's shrinking. Convince me that what you're doing makes sense. Please, you have got that opportunity today. The information you provided is quite sincerely. How do you verify it? You mentioned issues like funding and so on. Look at your slides. The end of the information. How can we be sure that this information is accurate and verified? So slide 9. My comment, Honorable Chair, with due respect of the IDP, there was nothing to slide 9. I am one of the 4 or 5 members who have been with this portfolio policy since 2014. There is nothing. All the other members, 1, 2, 3, 4, would agree. Why do you repeat information preservation? This is a testimony to us more than a year ago. This sends to me a picture of an institution that is not solving problems. You can't make that statement to us. In the new year, the new, the sixth parliament, you can surprise those new members with that kind of information. Maybe they will be impressed. But if I come back, I'll make sure that I'm still the first one. Just to be sure that we don't repeat what you told us. I'm not going to go for it. I'm just looking forward to make it. And still on the same slide, I hope for many contractors from your
register, I'm participating in the PIC process. Yeah, it's not necessarily.
Now, those are presidential infrastructure projects. That's why you're talking nothing about billions. How many contractors, black contractors, genuine black contractors, are participating as primary contractors in the presidential infrastructure projects? I'm sure you know that. Here we're not talking millions, we're talking billions. Men are multi financial year projects. For me, that come off the system. And I'm asking this question because I am not sure if you have indicated that for later, that not everybody, not everything necessarily goes through your register. You miss here and there. Slide 10. Here we crumble it all in the context of economic development, Honorable Chair. If you give a contractor a 300,000 man construction project, what percentage of that would you expect to be his profit? At some point, you came to this committee and you indicated to us, you presented a grand plan of how you measure contractors such that they make, they end a living out of construction. Because we're not just playing football here. Where even if a team doesn't make it to Russia in 2019, it's a non-issue. We're just trying for the next tournament. We're not talking about people who go to school, lay their head down and say, I'm generating for this. They do give it their all. How much profit, say IDD, and then the government, do you expect that the contract on average? I know someone in your state may make less or more than someone in there, but you should have an idea that when a person is a player at the level, this is more or less how much they have. That's the essence of being involved in the business side. Those qualifications, I think, are open to abuse in order to win their contractors. This is the Eastern Cape and the Western Cape. In fact, a week ago, I made a statement in Parliament to say that those contractors have started the battle against jobs in Eden. Hence, the Minister for Public Works was in what they tried. Partly must get partly to address this issue to be compatible. He said the qualifications for these big jobs are such that we are automatically eliminated from even tendering for these jobs. And about a month ago, I actually confronted him to the for basic education, and he confirmed public works that in the Eastern Cape and in the first state, they have given up on allocating jobs for their safety program to contractors under public works in the SLT and the first state. He made that statement to me. So we are relieved when Mr. Bonhoff confessed that there is no transformation. This is for so many years. That's why Chairperson has said this is a depressing situation. We're not an institution under a government department that can convey that there is absolutely no transformation. And part of the reason is, of course, pre-qualification for higher jobs, that you must have had a table of so much, and you must have kept down so much. Do we have a bank that specializes in financing people to make sure that if you may even have a table, but at least the bank can say, we kept that solidity for this given for my contingent kidnapped. Do we have that magical stone to support and to make sure that there's no reason? That's why I said, Chair, I said, we take it as our course from the committee that this arm of government to give up. We're putting this question to the department and saying, in a corner, I am no bonus points for that. My job as our major to make sure that I also contribute to a crazy and legal. About 2% in my family life, or jobless. About 2 kids who are in the 40s, they are jobless, except because of the poor economy. So I
speed of the pain is attractive for now. From my monthly salary in Planet, I could provide for 2 kids of their own kids every month. So they feel the effects of joblessness.
Last question. Slide 22. Does this information confirm and verify that this national department, these district municipalities, do not take their tenders through you? You understand it to the manager that on Friday 22, you're giving us information there. Do I understand that information to mean that even national departments, even district municipalities, do not necessarily inform you of what they are doing? That was they're undermining their own policy. Just confess that it would be a simple yes or no to that you are masterminded. This is not exactly what the man is. Never know exactly what to say. Once you confess, this is a wonderful opportunity for us. That's why I told you here and I was wrong about it today. Because this information to me is very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Honorable
thank you, Honorable President. My name is both organizations. The first presentation is slide number 6. I just have a question which is a colorful question but an important one. Bullet points they indicate that the construction industry is quite high as well as place and so forth. My question is why is it taking so long for transformation to take place? While I understand it can't happen overnight, but it's actually slower than slow. If it goes any slower than it's gonna stop. And all those issues that are raised there, it's actually an indictment, honestly. Somebody needs to do something sooner rather than later. If I also refer on the same slide to slide number 10. Just a clarification from my side, and I'm not so sure. It's the first time I'm hearing of this term here, gender champion. Is this something that is able to identify the difference between a man and a woman? I'm just a gender champion. Finally, there is a very good question, Mr. Chair. Is there, maybe not now again, a breakdown of these contractors on these development programs? They indicate that there's 27 development programs, contractor development programs. Can we get a breakdown of what who the contractors are on those different programs? If I move on to the next slide number 4, just a general question with regards to the registration of contractors. Is there a cost? Slide 4, slide 4, point on the second presentation. Is there a cost that is attached to the application of the registration? And if so, is the same cost applicable to all the different grades? In other words, if you apply for grade 1, you pay a fee, and if you apply for grade 10, you pay lots of 9, you pay the same fee. And then, could you get an indication as well? I know somewhere I've seen that there is online registration, but if not, if there is a manual application, what is the enormity of the amount of paperwork that is required for the application? Slide number 9. This is the one that deals with the mentoring. Yes, it is, yeah. Now, mentoring by you is an important part of the development of contractors. That is anything. My understanding of mentoring is on the job guidance. While mentoring guidance is the work standing there. But my question with regards to this is how does that work? And then also, are there any accredited service providers that can be used in the mentoring? In other words, could they be formal training or just on-the-job mentoring? And then if so, for example, if a contractor has have a short-term contract for the 6 months, does he have to be mentored in if he, if he goes on to another contract? Or does that mentoring that he's gone through on the one contract, does it go forward? In other words, does it count for, because you know when somebody, if you get 6 months contract and you get mentored and mentoring in the same, in other words, my question would be, is there a portfolio available for this get for a contract? Slide number 13. Now, just with regards to the fact that contractors require to complete projects to the value of X rand, my question is that would joint ventures count as well? Because you might find that the contract doesn't perform a contract on its own, you might be assisted. So, would there be a portion of that? Would he be a necessary part of the 90 million rand contract, or does he have to do the contract himself? With regards to the registration, another question I will share have is that with, if it's a man, what about the patient? Is there any site visit that he's carried out as well? Or is it just the paperwork that is used to give the accreditation to the applicant? Two more on the chair person. Item 16, I just have a concern with the third last line, where it indicated that because of the large number of applicants that there must be some level of barriers. Now, I think that I understand the reason for that, but it seems a little unfair to punish the genuine cases that are trying to create one because of the failures. So that's just a comment on that slide. And then the last one on slide number 17 on is this transfer the records from one contractor to another contractor. My question with regards to that is that is the individual the one that is going to re-register, or is it the company that's going to re-register? Because it might be that the or that one of the shareholders, if it's the major, if it's the only shareholder, he might want to start a new firm, because that's the explanation that was given, and then go with that new firm to the new firm with the same accreditation, the same grading, whereas he doesn't go with all the resources that he had in the previous firm. So my question, I'll just say is that is the individual, will he then qualify to be re-registered at the new company with the old grading? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Reza.
Thank you, Chair. Let's start off with the ladies. Let's go to ladies first. So, seem to recall that the reason that we asked for a follow-up on the proactive steps taken to increase the role the rate of progression of women-owned construction companies in the CRDP was because we had absolute failure to meet the predetermined objectives when we went through the ERRR process. And so, I sat and listened to the presentation today, and I'm starting to wonder, you know, is this going to change what happened before? Have we changed what we're doing? Because if you that old thing, the definition of insanity is do the same thing over and over and expect different results. But, so what have we changed? I'm not sure that we have. The programs that we had in place don't seem to be working. So what is new? I mean, if you consider that when we went on our oversight trip to the Eastern Cape, there was a school that was being refurbished, rebuilt. And there was a particular contractor employed there, I can't remember their name. I did some research on them and I found it is, it's a woman-owned entity. And all the people on the site were men. And, you know, the best way to get a woman-owned construction company or engineering company or plumbing or electrical company is to have someone who starts out as a plumber or an electrician or a draftsperson or a builder or something and works their way through and builds up using their interest and the knowledge that they've gained over years and ends up owning their own company. I mean, that's how most people get to own companies. You don't just kind of parachute in as the owner of a company, not knowing what your entity does. So, my question is, what is being done at foundation level? And I got quite excited because there was some talking about the efforts that were done in grades 1 to 9. And it got me all excited. I need to realize that we were talking about CIPB grades, not school grades. Okay. Now, what I'm trying to get at, ladies and gentlemen, is the fact that repeatedly government keeps on targeting women's projects by saying, oh, you must go on a beadmaking course, and you must learn to knit, and you must play with pink dolls, and you must be a woman, okay? We're not breaking the mold. We're not getting out of this mindset that women can't be engineers. And that mindset needs to change at school level, when people are starting to work out what their future is. So, are we starting to reach out to young girls and to start teaching them? Ladies, the world is your oyster. You can do anything, you know. I often say, you know, a woman only has to be twice as good as a man to get the same position, okay? But and often they are. And women are good at things like sitting and drafting, being engineers, attention to detail, nurturing, going to the right design, etc., etc. That's built into some of our differences that make us so complementary to each other. But it's not to say that women can't be engineers, women can't be builders. So what is being done to change things at that grassroots level in the formative years of a girl child? Are we reaching out as an industry or as government or on behalf of the industry to go into these career guidance discussions and to start making engineering sexy, start making construction sexy to young girls? So that was my issue on the ladies' side. It might be simplistic, and maybe I've missed the target entirely, but it's just very strongly something I feel that we're not breaking the mold. We are doing the same thing over and over. Then, when we get to the issues of transformation, and specifically around municipalities, you know, what we've got is we've got a shrinking pie, as was indicated in the presentation, which is alarming. Because, again, on our oversight visits and on our daily walks around in our various constituencies, we become very aware that there is massive urbanization. We become aware that there is insufficient capacity in most government offices in terms of space, in terms of school space, in terms of all of these things. We need to be growing. We're not. The pie is shrinking, and that's concerning. Then you have a look and you see that the space that we do already have is deteriorating due to lack of maintenance. And yet the pie is shrinking. We're not spending money, we're not maintaining. So that alone is a worrying factor, and obviously it calls for a deeper discussion and probably more by our colleagues in the finance cluster, but certainly I think that public works has a role to play in terms of jumping up and down and demanding the money. Because it's one thing to have a lovely, you know, have a nice lovely car. If you don't service it, it becomes useless after 2 years and you may as well throw it away, lost all its value. That's what's happening with so many of government's buildings, is that they're deteriorating to the point where they all have no more value. They're deteriorating to the point where police stations are being abandoned because the state of neglect of the building, there's no maintenance that's been done, and police stations are being closed because of that. And so we've got this shrinking pie. We've got this urgent need from our citizens on the ground. And massive expectations that we need to deliver on. and we're trying to balance it at the same time with transformation. But we're putting tremendous pressure on the people who are out there doing the implementation of these projects. And I'm going to talk about those numbers of municipalities where we indicated that municipalities are relying quite heavily on the kind of grade, I think it was 6 to 9 contractors, and ignoring the grades 2 to 4. And having come freshly out of an environment, municipal environment, where I was responsible for these projects, I can tell you right now, there's this thing called clean audit, which we're all chasing. Okay? And if you're chasing a clean audit, you've got a budget that you need to spend in a specific time. You're going to give it to someone that you know and trust. You are going to try and make sure that the project gets delivered within the time frame, within the budget, so that you can tick your boxes and you can get your clean audit and everyone can tell you how good you are. You are not focused on transformation. You are focused on getting your job done and delivering. Now, is that good? Is it bad? Well, you know what? It's neither, because actually, the citizens, the best transformations that we can deliver is to give good service to our citizens of the country. But we are not transforming business. Is that the job of public works? Well, again, we've got white papers that tell us that it is, but those white papers are dated 1990 something. Okay, and we've indicated that already those things need to be reviewed. But the reality is that at the end of the day, we have got a dual problem. We've got citizens not getting services, and we've got a construction industry that is not getting power. And I can understand from both sides, I can see it from both sides. I don't have a solution. I think it's up to the turbines, the technocrats as they call them. We need to come up with a solution. But we need to find a way of balancing this thing. Because the reality is that delivering service is the constitutional mandate of municipalities of the province of the national government. It's a constitutional mandate. It's something we have to do. Transformation is another mandate that has been given and that also needs to be delivered. Balancing the two and finding the happy medium. And the reality is that a lot of those grade 2, 3 and 4 people are sitting in grade 2, 3 and 4 because they can't do the work. I mean, I can tell you right now, we employed a guy in Gauteng who was in that level, and I mean, he's been making us big promises because it was a transformation thing. He had lots of promises and he failed to deliver repeatedly on every single one. He was given chances. We rolled over budget for a year, and a year later the project was still not delivered. And the reality is that breaks trust. And municipalities have to deliver on their mandates. Thank you. I really think we need to change our thinking a little bit in terms of how we are looking to balance these two issues of service delivery and transformation.
Thank you very much. I'm thinking of the lady that requested to leave, so that if they must leave those questions, so we'll take the answers for them. Honorable Masera.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and let me appreciate the presentation that you got to me, and also the time that I gave to ensure that we may be able to bring of the construction. My first question is about the women who are organizing themselves to women into construction. You did mention about it. In provinces, we have got those women in construction for some time. Some of them have already been lost interest in it. They are not over there. How do you liaise with those women in construction who are found or organized in those provinces to ensure that something is happening even where they are? As I said, some of them have already lost interest. You also indicate that in the indicator you are wishing to have 60% of women, and at the same time you are unable to reach 60%. What are you doing to ensure that are able to reach that number? Because it's going to be more women in the field. Over and above what is being done for men. what are you doing for women to be more capacitated as we know that most of them we have that in this field we never had women participating and we are trying to encourage them to come in and participate. The other issue is about the grading itself. We are saying those who are in grade one, in most cases, they concentrate on that one because they do not even have the financial to get into the projects that are being advertised. That is why they are concentrating them. How are we assisting those people, those who are in grade one, so that they can graduate to a better grade? Is it true that in some programs we do not have contractors that are from 8 to 9 or 7? Is it true that there are those provinces where doctors you don't have, where you are forced to take someone from another province to come in to make a project in a particular province because it's a particular program? If so, what are we doing? The last one that I'm having is about the underfunding that is there in municipalities. I see here there is an underfunding of 13 billion rand in those municipalities. Are we in a position to assist those people so that we don't have this lot of money?
Thank you very much. You want to come in? Mr. Damude, you want to come in? Okay, let's give the ladies first, then Honorable Adams will conclude because you are going to be voting.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you to the CIDP for the work that they have done. I think as a community, we are all proud of our works. We are very proud. And I'm a critic of the one, but I'm proud to be part of the public works family. So always we think of that. Jefferson, my first question is around the parts of it we hear about civil engineers, electrical engineers. What is the role of the money surveyors in this? And why don't you mention them as they are part, a very crucial part of the construction? Jefferson, with regard to women, I am a forerunner of women's rights in my own way. I want you to be part of it. My first question, and just I want to say this few sentences in Afrikaans. In the first presentation, 6, the second aspect, for the period 2014 quarter 1 to 2016 quarter 4, there was no substantial changes in the grades 2 to 6. Now, Jefferson, this comment, the few of us that were here since I was born in June 2014. The few of us here, and it's a lot of us, 1, 2, 3, I can count at least 4, 5. We have fight for transformation since then.
En vir my, voorzitter, is dit een aanklag tegen ons. Is dat voor jou komitee? Beide die woord heb ek gesit, dit is oorgekend. Met alle woorde, vir 2,5, 3 jaar, was dit my einde oor, oor maande af die maand. Het is spekte van wat ons hier gesê het. Was dit een aanklag? Absoluut. Ek los het.
Construction as this is an industry of
department. You know, when in 2019, when these big stadiums were built, shouldn't they have flashed a red light for the possibilities of collusion? And I would like to know from all of the Department of Public Works, your relationship with the Competition Commission. And you know, construction companies should only pay an X amount of money. They should also have a responsibility, like a social responsibility. The money is for them to collect nothing. They are burdens. But they should get, as we say, when you get a sentence, the judge sentence, you must community to community. We should also canvass the Department of Public Works for that community work. And zooming in to construction. Jefferson, initiatives of the Public Works Department. They say, I think they have since 2015, 16, they have Women Empowerment Advisory Council, they have a lot of programs. And I'd like to ask, like my colleague, there's gender champions stuff. They say there were never gender champions. So you took your eye off the ball. I'd like to know, Jefferson, these gender champions, when were they appointed? Are they appointed? Is there a strategy? How they would go about? They shouldn't be like mice that are blind, running here, running there. They should have targets that they should look at. So now, I'll finish now. And it's on the 11th slide, slide 11 of the first presentation. 27 contractor development programs in operation. 27. Can you keep your eye on the 27 walls? Are you clown? There's those balls in the air. Shouldn't you decrease them and be sure that they are successful? Just the synergy between the 27 contracts and development. They should speak to each other. In Jefferson, contract 12. There are 27 contractor development programs, success rate, evaluation of it. I think I should stop there. I'm taking too much time. I have a lot of more questions, but anyway, I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Adams. Mr. Adams.
Well, thank you, Chair. Just for the chairperson, this is not an effort, there's no nepotism or family members or anything. Chair, no, thank you very much also to my colleagues. I also want to Chair, thank the CIDP under the leadership of Mkuno that are basically turning the standard ship around. As you know that, and support. As we know that CIDP was one of those problem children of government that could never get their act together. But I think there is leadership at the moment and we want to thank them for that. But Chair, my first question is, does the CIDP board really do what set out is the act for them? Because it's now been, I think, third parliament I've headed the Committee on Public Works in the National Council of Provinces, and we had the same
basically the same problem. Every time, the same answers. We are going to do this. We are going to do this. We are going to do this. But if you look at the Act, the powers, functions, and duties of the board, it says support of emerging enterprises sector. That emerging enterprises sector includes all emerging sectors, whether it is women, youth, people with disability, historically disadvantaged, all of that. Simplification of regulatory procedures. Must facilitate communication between construction industry stakeholders. All spheres of government is sensitive for us. Now, Chair, we've seen part of the problem that we've got in South Africa with the infrastructure and the spending, the rest of the municipalities. I want to find out from the CIDP board, do you engage? Because in terms of the Act, you must. You must do that. Do you engage where you see municipalities don't underspend? Do you engage with them? You've got that power to do that. You can't wait for public works to do it on your behalf. You've got the power to do that. The minister has given you that power. You must facilitate that. I know that when the new chairperson came in and was appointed, I think it was last year, he then went on roadshow with the CIDP board to all stakeholders, which never happened, or it happened, but then it died down. But now, Chair, I think it is something that needs to be done. And I want to ask the CIDP board, specifically the rural areas, the deep, deep rural areas. Leave the city, leave the paper club, leave those fancy hotels and stuff where you know you have no meetings. Go to the deep, deep rural areas. I know the chairperson is from Limpopo, who doesn't want to go there because they're very economical and deep and all that. You must take his board to that rural areas down there. In Matatieri, Lusikisiki, those rural areas. I'm not sure whether Bisho is a rural area, it's a well-developed township as such, Chair. So, but in those rural areas, please hear what the people are saying. It's part of your duties as a force to do that. But we want to thank the chairperson and the board for going out and have that stakeholder engagement as such, Chair. And then, Chair, the other point, and then, sorry, my colleagues have asked so much of our questions that, you know, sometimes it's a funny thing when they talk to you and you say, no, we must do this, we must do that, and then they just grab the points that you have mentioned in an informal conversation to them. That's why I'm not taking any offers of honorable for time to take now for lunch anymore. You've stolen all my things here. Chair, the other thing is the confidence levels of your grade 4, 3 and 4 has improved over the last quarter, according to the CIDP. But the confidence level of grade 5, 6, 7 and 8 has dropped. Why? If you can give us an explanation why that is as such. And then, Chair, the SMB business conditions and the general holders and subcontractors' confidence continues to fall. It's a worrying trend. Now, is it because of the underspending of infrastructure of the municipalities, or because we have seen on the slide here, I don't know that slide, but we've seen that the metros and all those other municipalities don't spend. Now what are they doing with the money if they don't spend? So don't you think as part of the Act that you must then intervene and have discussions with them? If public works don't want to do it because you're forever going to wait for public works, they are Department of Police waiting. So you've got to wait for them. So I think you must take the initiative, Chairperson of the Board, through you, Chairperson. Chairperson of the Board, with your board committees that you have put there on the board, to engage with these municipalities that underspend and find out how you can assist them. Because you haven't got the money to go and help. You haven't got the money to employ people, but you can facilitate communication in terms of your act. You can do that. So I think, Chair, we need to do that. And then also, the CIDB, yes, they've created 184,000 jobs, but they've shed 140,000 jobs. So they've actually created 44,000 jobs.
Not the CRTB.
Yeah. That's what you said in your statement. Also in your media statement, Doctor, where you said that this comes from the media statement. But you have not said to the media that you have created 184,000 jobs, and then in the third quarter, reading up, 140,000 jobs has been shared. So you must also pray deeply for good things that you are doing. That is, people must know what you are doing. And in terms of the woman in construction and all that, the gender champions, the first time I heard about this gender champions, I think it's 2014, I've been in this committee 2004-2009, it's the first time that I hear about the gender champions. But the problem is, everything is centralized in Erebus. The regional office, in terms of our oversight management, that is the output of delivery centers. But nothing is happening in the regional offices. We've seen it in our recent oversight visit that we had, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, that sometimes you talk to the people of the regional office, they say, "This head office, we are waiting on head office, we are waiting on head office." So, are you afraid of empowering the regional offices? Because those are the offices that need to be empowered. So, you know, and I think next year, when I go for family, I'll come back to the city. Say, no, gender champions is there. But we want to figure how many gender champions are in the regional offices, what is their target, how far have they come to their target, have they reached their target, as such. Chair, I think, the CIDB, Chair, my last point. The attendant system that you've got. Now, some people in the rural area hasn't got the attendant. They haven't got computers. They must walk far to the library. There's some instances where there is no connectivity, Wi-Fi, like we have here in the urban areas. You know, when you book into a hotel or get close to a hotel, just to get Wi-Fi, municipalities are rolling out Wi-Fi, but in the hills of the Oxford, City, and all those areas, there's no Wi-Fi. My honourable member from Oxford says to me she has to drive around 10 kilometres to get to the U. So, what can you do to assist? But also on the rollout, making people aware that the CIDB also looks at attending system. Because that is basically what we need to notify contractors about. Tenders. As such. And you must advertise them as well. Is that still happening? How are you assisting? Because people say, hey, we don't know, we haven't heard, we don't know about this thing. You only do it in the mainstream media, like the Sunday papers, or is it in your community papers as well? Thank you, Chair.
Can I remember you have that to say?
No.
I didn't see your head.
You didn't see my head, it was inside.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Jesus.
Lord, thank you, Lord. Mine is not a question as you join, just a comment.
Good.
Thank you. I'd like also to thank department for comprehensive presentation. Though we have been hearing this for quite a long time, but now we like to change things. We want implementation, one action. Mine, I'm going to concentrate only on a time frame. That you've been telling us about the reviewing of this CIDP Act in terms of creation. For how long? We need time now. We can't come here every day telling us the same story that we still review. Second one is the question of this rural. I'm from rural, I'm a primitive rural woman. But we don't show any implementation plan. What are we going to do with the rural woman? What is it going to do as a department of public works? My concern area is the question of alleviation of poverty. You know, when we go all over the South Africa, find out there's a lot of land unoccupied. I think if we can maybe come with a plan to utilize that land, that the people, especially from the rural area, they can plow or do something for them to survive. Cannot just wait for head office to come and decide and review the whole 3 years and nothing's happening. Really, let us think of the poverty and unemployment that is facing our country. You're in crisis. The last one, this lack of technical skills. I feel soon that the CBE with this training, really, they are not everywhere. Like we said, when it comes to provincial, we don't have those training. And Limpopo, where I come from, we need that training, let us training skills, technical skills. But then we will have people who pass the trick, especially if our children, they don't work. I think it's our time now to create job opportunities. We don't have to wait and review and go in the office and a meeting. I think these meetings to us, we just have a meeting, but we don't have any case. We can't go back and say we have done it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. DDG, we are back. We would appreciate a brief answers if we can be done, say, 40 minutes time. So that's for who votes, but I understand there are quite a number of questions. But if you are brief to the board, but also if you have noted all the questions, questions that may not be answered and may need more info, you can also create a document and send to my office that seeks to clarify all areas. But I want to add a question that was raised by Food and Minister Reda, Honorable Pintan, informed by the visit, the last visit we did in Eastern Cape before I came in. There's a clinic at Tekule between Tata and Mongo also. It's top of the arch. It's put by the youth of the web, has equipment inside. But the contractor is not paid.
So he has taken the keys for himself until he's paid. Why the person is not paid? So this was discovered by the visit we have done some few months back. But I have not got indication that you have sorted that issue, even when we have gone to discover that we have not done that. So it becomes a problem if, even if the working committee, the portfolio committee can tell you, hey, fix this one, you still reluctant. There's a school around King Williamstown or Fort Beaufort. In terms of the initial plan, it was to have a hall
like other schools in other areas.
Remember, we are reversing the imbalances of the past. It is not going to be because the black school is used by black people. They cannot have a decent hall. What are they going to do? They must be in, out in the open. Can't be right. Because you can't, in any suburb in South Africa, you will never find a school with no hall, top of the range hall. But there, today, a school built today, no hall. Today, it's built today. So the committee discovered that. So, again, there are problems there as well, even in terms of the payment. So, I need answers. You may not answer now for this of my question. Questions that have to do with the oversight visit. You may attend them later and give them written clarity to my office, but before 3 days. Because we have visited sometimes where you were aware, so maybe you just hope we forget. Or the God you are praying. Reverend Naredi, we hope the God you pray will make us forget. My God will make us do our work. The God that I pray, what has to work hard. So please give answers. There are other issues that we are identified by the oversight. Oversight business are not just there for us to visit. They are serious business. When the committee has visited, you must go and look into all those things, including the justice center there in Umtata. Want clear answers in 3 days. Clear answers. In fact, I'm going to be visiting there myself. All those areas I'm going to be checking how far have you moved. So I'm warning you before a time that all the areas the committee touch base with, I'm intending during the holidays, I won't be in holiday. I'll be checking. I may even attend more. You see, Honorable Freddy Adams happened to mention Lusiki Siki. I'm staying next door in Mutter Club. I belong to Lusiki Siki. So I'll start, I'll move rather, move to a morning. So I'll be checking. Please provide answers. But the sooner the person who that clinic is ahead, the better. Because this does not feel good. We don't need the people of South Africa to go against all of us. Because officials that you are paying every month are not doing their well.
But it's not a single man who has to pay you. But why don't you pay that contractor?
Now, you see, there's a contractor, I don't know whether it's the one in the Buffalo City or where. Contractor is included. Because he was not paid,
the SARS has acted on him. He is now taken out because he is, in terms of compliance, he said he is not compliant because he didn't have money to do the other compliance necessity. Let alone pay the bank. That's another thing. So you put people in worse trouble than they were before. Now, this is not acceptable. This is not acceptable. Please, let's do what we must do. Don't think a miracle will happen. Everyone must work. We are a team. Let's help one another. The department, the CICT, everybody, all your entities, let's work together. Because when we work together, there are chances of overcoming through our problems, including municipalities. Let's talk to each other. Identify those unspent funds. So from where I sit, if we work together, we will resolve. But if we think, honorable members will just forget. It won't be right. We are not going to forget. That is why I'm going to go back and follow up on the visit that was done by the portfolio committee during the holiday. So, which means please try to sort things, even things that we don't, we didn't visit and find out, but please sort them. But there's one thing I really don't like. The cake is big. But why target one or three contractors and give all the contracts? One contractor. All the contracts. Others are starving. There's this contractor that says, God is great. God is great. Only for one contractor. How can this God be choosy? God is for all. I will give you the name of the contractor.
Pastor Mamesi.
It is in the name. But happy the construction. I'm giving you now. But happy the construction. Give me an information, Uti. How many contracts has that one got this year and last year? Tell me, who is closer to him?
And why
do
one of
such a thing? One bad thing becomes almost everything.
It's not fair.
Others are crying. They were crying, I guess, in the minister and for the gods. But it's not the thing of thinking that somebody else. So please, we don't want unnecessary to do for things that we call. Let's share the cake. Is it a problem to share? But even if you happen to say this person is hard working, is finishing the work, then he deserves to be given more profit because he's finishing. But assist others as well. Because if you become the only one, people then would own everywhere, own the president, own me. Is it right? So assist if there are people who are in authority, who are losing friendship, proximity, advise them that when this thing comes to the portfolio, we will ask you questions, not those that are assisted. So I hope they are to learn. So I want answers in those areas. But let's avoid this thing. Let's try and everybody, let's assist. One example is the last one, in Warmer, in PE. There's a social housing project in Warmer. It warned the government big award, it is in human settlement. It won the government big award. It was put up by the subcontractor. That subcontractor, after finishing that award-winning social housing project, is nowhere, doesn't get given any job in Warmer. Is not getting any job. So which means the duty to subcontractors, because we are a government that is caring to the poor. Why now are we caring to the top ones? So the South Africa of today must be different to the South Africa
of some time back. So which means this one, this South Africa, must take care of even a small man, a man who's nobody. We must make a man who's nobody to be somebody. So everybody must have a reason to smile. So programs are like Patricia Adams was saying, programs of equipping and monitoring and helping others must not be paper, must be seen in the deep rural areas, like the Honorable Patrick Adams was saying. So please, if you cannot answer all the questions, note them, have a clear response. If in a later stage, I would appreciate. But let's look forward. We are here to help each other. The laws we make must empower the ordinary man. So if the ordinary man appreciates, you would have a nice day in your office. But if the ordinary men are not, because they also enjoy and make the whole thing, the whole country to the back. And then you all enjoy your stay in your office. So let's assist each other. We are here to also assist you. Over to you, DDG, in terms of the answer and the chairperson. We must also thank the chairperson for coming along as well. Thank you very much.
Honorable chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. I also want to thank all the members for the substantive engagement that we've been having throughout our discussion today. Chairperson, just a few issues before I proceed to request the colleagues to respond to questions. Of course, there will be a few that will take on the bit of chat, and then ask the CEO and the chairperson to also give a few others. And I also want to thank you for the direction that you provided that we should give you those that we can give you now that I think probably to provide to save time. And then those that are not going more detailed response, we should deal with in our office and providing some kind of a narrative, some kind of a report to us. Thanks for that, chairperson. Chair, on the issue of the clinic and the issue of the school, we will try to assist in the context of the sector. But these are dealt with by the provincial government itself directly. There is provincial mandate. We do not get involved in this way at all. The only way we can assist is because we have a technical amendment subcommittee.
Infrastructure.
Yeah, get
closer to the mic. We cannot record.
Yeah, yeah. This mic is not closed, Chair. I think it is fine now.
Yeah.
Let me do that. Nice to be able to speak. I don't want to say that. So, with the word that the Chair has mentioned, they are all provincial mandates. But also, in the context of the sector structure that we are coordinating at national, we will seek report from our colleagues in the provinces and provide them to the committee in the context of our amendment. The only thing I want to have the chairman to indulge us in is the 10 days will be too tight if we were to involve other colleagues. So I'd like to engage the chairperson in another meeting, just so that we have a clear and understand the process that is before us to get the information from the chair. The other thing, Chair, that I need to indicate is there was mention made of the engagement with municipalities, and again talk about gender champions as well, and the representation also in the nations and so on. I just want to mention a few things that, Chair, we used to have a challenge in the past, two shots identified by the former minister, or some kind of a challenge approach in dealing with issues of common interest. And again, coordinating them. This is why a branch, intergovernmental relations, was formed. So, I'm saying when the branch started this year in March, there are already a lot of chapters to ensure that we synergize our way, to ensure that there's some kind of a symbiosis in what we do, and also appreciate best practices as well, where others are doing better in the same environment, we should learn from them, and we're beginning to learn a lot. In the same context, we now have an M1 program of action that we developed between ourselves and the province. So we've got a sector POA. This POA looks into the budget of the entire sector.
looks into the portfolio, what needs to be executed in the entire sector.
Yeah.
They, you know, all of them look at who have problems, where, and who are doing better in those areas, and what can be learned from this. They also deal with issues of payment systems that they look at which problems is being there, what mechanisms are they using, so that they can learn from it. So I'm just saying, there's going to be far better coordination of most of the interactions with all the spheres of government going forward. We're already in the process, we signed this year, we signed about 20 memoranda of understanding and agreement in the settlement of this very objective of making sure that we synergize them together better going forward. I'll request the Reverend to handle a few of the individual questions and not only to the chairman. Some of the children will be to know them, follow them in detail. We'll give them and provide responses to members. And I'll also ask the chairperson and the CEO to just guide the team to ensure that it's reviewed, those are reviewed, and that are much more effective to provide feedback to the community. So I have some responses. Thank you.
Thank you.
In addition to the what the DG has said, indeed, the department has actually realized that you cannot be doing the same thing over and over again and yet expecting a different result. For the first time, after 10 years of the establishment of gender units, at our strategic planning last week, 2 weeks ago, before there was any presentation, we made a presentation on gender and women empowerment issues, which actually facilitated that all the branches, as they go out and go and, because we're working on our APPs, that each and every branch must engage on this issue. And hence, I've mentioned also the fact that the gender unit has now been elevated to the DG's office. To be honest with you, it's there talking about the remedy equity and how many women we have in the department. That's it. When it comes to actually influencing empowerment in the sector, it was not a big deal, a big issue. And also, like I've spoken about, the advisory council, which have really facilitated and assisted the department to see this differently. Like even the push that generally must be elevated to the DG's office, it was initiated by the advisory council, and that was actually implemented. Then I was even very excited that even the portfolio committee now is interested in doing what the department doing, because now it means people are saying, okay, perfect, now the portfolio committee wants to do what's happening with women. But initially, it has always been like business as usual. As long as we build hospitals and courts, as long as we build stations, police stations, as long as the department has done their mandate, it has never been really a big issue. In the process, when you do your mandate, how many women have been empowered? How many youth have been empowered? Can then be, so this is why now things are changing. I should have mentioned actually, we do have programs of developing, like we start from school development programs, where we have about 100 schools in the rural areas, where we have children who are going back and trying to encourage them to be part of the built environment. But we have not because we have realized that if you just go to university, not many, they will not be able to qualify to be doing built environment professions of that area because there has never been any interest in science. So if you don't have science and math, you are able to qualify into that field. So now we have a schools program where we have 100 schools that we mentor and when they have got kids that have been identified that in this program, and we have them every June for a winter program where we actually assist them in getting their medical science in order. Also, we do have open days where we go to these different schools to talk about the built environment, the construction industry, and all the professions. We have a reach out program that we do. We also have an artisan development program, which for the past financial year, there are about 133 artisans who were part of the program. And these artisans that they are staying, then they will be taken out into different regions, and some are even taken up by different departments as well as OE, SOEs,
to give them job experiential training. We have also, through the school program, we have awarded to date 237 bursaries to kids who are in the school program that are now doing the renowned built environment profession and different areas in education. Currently, we have about 233 kids who get full bursary from first year until the last. And we also monitor this. We get to sit down with them during the winter school, and we get to assist them and support them throughout. Not only that, and after they graduate, sometimes we have a young professional program, which is based in the department where it's young who are waiting for, who are candidates who are waiting to be registered. That we mentor them, they are also exposed to what the job is. You cannot be registered without you being exposed to the real work in the built environment. So these are the few programs that we have for the girl child. We also have a teen girl child and a program that we do. We reach out to schools, we speak about the built environment. We are trying to make it sexy, yes. Indeed, as you all know, that historically construction has been seen as a man environment, not sexy with the way they dress and all that. So we're just teaching our kids that, you know, it's okay to wear an overall and get out there as soon as you make the bath. So slowly and slowly we do that. And CIPP is for the same program, CBD is for the same program. We work with new collaborations, and we also work with new collaborations with SACPMP. We also have the same,
Is that the Communist Party or what?
Yeah, South African Council for the Project and Construction of the Information. About the 50% women, it is only in this particular contact program that the Department of Defense is strategy. We actually, through also good advice and Women's Advisory Council, because they went to the ExCo and a meeting and said, ExCo, we insist. I think it was only just last year when we were turning 60 years as women's building march. And they went there to ExCo, we want you to commit on some programs that you're doing for women. And so there was a suggestion that, okay, Contact incubator program, 60% should be women. And we went out on advertised and did all the necessary administrative to get the program going. But we did fail because not many women applied. We went back and shut down and looked at what is it that we went wrong. We realized that sometimes we assume that when you advertise, they just think people will get access to that information. So we have actually requested that it should be re-advertised. And we have gone to different regions. And for instance, Northern Cape is one area that is even worse, there was not even a single woman who even applied. And we had an outreach where we invited, working with South African Women in Construction, that they mobilized women to come to the meeting. We spoke about the challenges, issues that were there. I mean, when we even analyzed what were the problems, why didn't women make it, we found that there were so many slight things, like maybe filling in the form so they don't meet the criteria. And therefore, what we have done now, we have come up with a program where we have gone on our own roadshow together with SAWIC to get all women and help them how to complete those courses. This 60% we are going to meet Nakancha. And that is the countrywide. In all the provinces, we will be reaching out. We're going to Northern Cape, we're going to, next week we're going to Mpumalanga. And the challenge also has honorable race that, you know, sometimes you go to Kimberley and you forget that it is Northern Cape is very broad.
So unfortunately, when you go to Kimberley and you do have just have an event or an awareness event in Kimberley, you left out so many people in the rural areas, you know, that is not to be aware to Nelson, but you realize that if you go to Nelson, it does not necessarily mean that you have reached out to the only Pumalang. So that's why we need to sit down and really strategize on how we're going to do this. But not also forgetting that the other challenges also that, like you have mentioned, said that sometimes you concentrate on head office. As I can tell you, this is where the Zapat Gender Unit, which is an advocacy unit, there are two people working in women empowerment. And if you have to go and reach out, it becomes a problem. Hence, we came up with a proposal of having gender champions. I mean, this is just a creative way of trying to get other regions and other people participate because we are only based in head office. So what we did, we requested that different branches and different people identify somebody in the region who will be also having a gender issue. And it was just a creative way, it's not like the scientific way the gender champions they know. We just created that to get people involved in gender issues and actually acknowledging that there is not much that is being done. And so we are in the process of changing, there is a new structure in place that has been approved, that the minister has approved. We have made proposals to get more people in the gender unit. So we are hoping that we will be able to get more people who will be able to reach out. That's why it is a concern. Yes, indeed, women in the rural areas, they have actually given up most of them. Because when I remember in 2010, we did a research on the gender unit and we went to the Cape. There were many women who came on board and wanted to get into construction. But when we did, and there were women who said they had companies, construction companies, but when you looked at the register, CIDB register, and we, of course, we're doing that survey, and you find that those, some of the companies have long been taken out of the register because they never had any jobs. Because remember, you were, I think the center of the CIDB people talked about it, that they also used to do this downgrading. If you're into the register and you are in a certain grade, but you don't get a job for some years, you'll definitely be downgraded. So that has always been another problem. I think it also answers the question of why is there a certain period there not been a significant move between grade 1 and 6. It is because it has always been the challenge. There, these companies that don't get jobs, in the meantime, they get downgraded or they end up not even being registered. Some companies don't even know some jobs.
Yes.
Can we ask the respondents to move on to other questions?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Slater has been giving for a perfectionist when you were in this for over 5 minutes. There are many questions that we're going
to do. Okay. No, it's just that when we are in the portfolio committee, we want as much information as possible. I think Ms. Temera is doing that, is giving us the information we want. But maybe some of the information, Mr. Miller, you can then give, by the way the DGF said, you give the narrative so that specific questions are also answered. Because maybe even in the gender champion issue you are talking about, you are not taking the advantage of also answering the question. What is this animal called? Gender, is it against men? Is it, so you are not also answering it. You are just saying you have now started it, but you are not also helping those questions that way to do with what you are dealing with. So it's understand. Because there was a question as well. There were more women who were registered in the Limpopo area, but many of them have now lost interest because they were not given any job. Now you are not also answering what are you doing to remedy that situation. Because you can't create structures on top of the other structures. Well then you change it names. So I think when you give info but say it's addressing that question and what is it that you are doing. Because there was a question from Ms. Masiera that says he's happy about the project, but not happy that people are losing interest because of lack of assistance. The poor people on the ground are not taken
see, so we tend to look at those that are popular. So maybe the time is always our enemy. Now I like to hear when a chief director explains issues, I'm just saying, but because of the questions, panel members want the specific questions, you can touch them, other information can be given in a narrative like I suggested, but the question that panel members were specifically digging through, they would love to hear answers from them, because they would think that worship here as well. I get it, sometimes you are rooting. Now you want to preach instead of answering questions. Maybe can you round up?
Chairperson.
Uh-huh.
Chair, with all due respect, I no, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, with all due respect, and I really mean it with all due respect. We I think we must also be fair to the presenters in terms, because they are also sticking to what we have asked them to come and brief us about. Some of the questions were off the mark, but that did not even fit into what the briefing was all about from us as members. So I would because I'm really interested in this rural areas, because you know the ex-president of Zimbabwe said, don't allow a woman to feed a man, because that's why we were kicked out of the Garden of Eden. So, but because of the poverty that there is in South Africa, because of the situation that the Chinese says, teach a man to fish, then he can provide for himself. Now, we've also got the responsibility as parliamentarians to teach and to bring these services that our government has got to our rural areas, to our women as such as that. So it's quite interesting. But I want to suggest here, with your permission, that most of the other questions, as you have also said, if the thing is in writing, we can say it is written, like in the Bible, and say it is written. And then we've got the proof. If we can get most of the answers detailed in writing, with your permission, that will also save us and help us a lot, so that we can also get study into that.
Thank you very much.
I'm not fighting the problem over time, sir.
No.
Thank you.
I understand. We all agree. We are interested to hear. Well, do the bit you can do, Chief Director. Just summarize. Let's hear the other champions who were presented. The bit they can. So the additional will be written, but let's hear what you can answer. It's always good to hear you answering. It's a time that is ending. Thank you.
My apologies. I thought I was actually answering the questions that I was
asked. No, you were asked.
So I'm not sure what you think. But anyway, the issue of funding, because then we actually were doing an agenda unit and to address that. We have engaged in the department, we realize that there is the issue that one of the honorable asked about why did you say finance is a challenge, and on the other hand, it is, you are also saying that you are discussing with but that is good CIPB. But we have also engaged with the Department of Small Business, there is an MOU that has been signed by the Department of Small Business, because we realize that with women issues, that I think we need to research, then the women were declined loans to normal banks, because women had to deal with, we have smaller kind of problems there with your women's accounts, with your these are, you think that these are small issues, but they can affect you in the long run. That is why women have got the challenge. We need to address those difficulties. So we realized that with the normal banks, they will have their issues and they will have their criteria, which is not very friendly. And so we have engaged with the Department of Small Business, and they have approved a loan about 30 million for the people who want to implement this quantum incubator program, so that it can be able to assist women to give that support. Also, covering the issue of that was raised, that you have to have a certain turnover for you to be able to use a certain kind of work. So these are actually addressing all those other issues. So I think maybe in summary, I would say that we are definitely moving to another direction, and I hope next time we come for a report, we'll be able to give you updates as to how we want to know this building that we put in place, how much we can bring it into the pump. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Reverend.
Thank you. We're quite mindful of the fact that we really do not have time. But let me also assure the Honorable, I also come from people from the village also. and it's not true this story that they know me. When he came, we were in the Popo last month, he ate a lot of meat. And I said to him, it's not true, he's just spreading all these rumors about us. From the Popo, which are not calling.
Come to Popo, I'll show you how
to do it. Yes. Just to go back to our story at the CIDP. Yes, it is correct that the organization has stabilized, I think, great. And then it did take a lot of time to be able to do that. But one of the things which is still very critical, which I had already mentioned, Honorable Ryder, I want you to be with me here. There is a problem in terms of how they act as the research has started. It's a big fundamental problem. We identified that, research on that, lawyers work on it, and to rewrite that so that we should really be very focused. Rather than all these things of trying to be everything to everybody. We are not a training institution, for instance. We can never compete with the university. We can never compete with even a basic training institution. We can't. We do not offer any finance to anybody. We can't. We've got no facilities. We can't. So we've done this. So the act is done. We've submitted the correct chairman, I think, a couple of months ago. So it is going through that. However, we are where we are. We are doing the best that we can. Let me give a more maybe vivid example. Look at us as a regulator. If you want to know approved as a driver, you know, ordinary driver's license, you go to the traffic department, you get tested, and they give you a license. But it is not really for the tester and the person who's approving you to teach you how to drive. So you can't do that. This is where the act becomes a very huge contradictions within itself. That is why we can sit here and talk about development, which is very close to our hearts. We can sit here and talk about regulation at the same time. How do you do that? You can't. It's difficult to do that. Now, I ever have said that we are making progress, and I think in the next couple of months, I hope once we get approved, we'll be able to operate move on that. When I look at all these many questions that are here, I think I would also like to make a suggestion. Maybe we can return answers to a lot of these that were raised. But for me, if you look at the original questions, the question number 5, I think it's a very critical question around the reasons why jobs are being lost. It's not only men losing jobs, and I think by and large women losing jobs. I think that also becomes very important, so that together with the department, not only us, we should really begin to address it. Very seriously, how do we fix that?
Thanks, Chairperson. Honorable Chair, Portfolio Committee members. Taking cue from what the Chairperson has said, I would just then maybe attend to 2 or 3 questions that were posed in interest of time. There was a question that was asked, and the ones that I attend were the ones that are not related in terms of the presentations, for those who provide detailed answers for. There was a question that was asked in respect of what do we expect to be the profit margins, and how should contractors, for an example of a 300,000 rand contract. The first thing I would want to explain is that one, depending on economic conditions, profit is in essence, after you've accounted for all of your expenses, that is what you get. Now, in tough conditions, you can expect anything where factors are actually doing break even, which is 0% to about 5%. That is what they normally do in tough conditions. And in our current context, we have a situation where construction is the only sector that's actually in recession, technical recession. Now, in good times, we should expect anything around 5% going up in terms of our profit margins. But what's important, though, is not to focus on the profit, is to focus on what is called in construction contracts as PH, which is preliminaries and general. Preliminaries and general normally account for about 10% of the value of a contract, right? So in the context of, for instance, of 300,000, you're talking around 20,000 rands. Now, in PH, that is where a person would account for their salary. How much do I have to pay? And so for the maintenance school, my plant, the cars that I have on site, and electricity, and all of those things. That excludes labor. Labor costs would range anything between 50 to 20%, depending on the nature of construction, in terms of each rent you spend in that particular context. But what then becomes important also is that you must remember a typical 300,000 rand contract is actually a small contract. And when we say a contractor has a limit in terms of a tender, it doesn't mean at any point in time that's the only tender or work they're doing. A person could have multiple 300,000 contracts in any number for different clients. So you can then start to say, let's say for argument's sake, that person is doing 10 300,000 contracts, which I would estimate they wouldn't last for longer than 3 months because of the nature of the size. So that person in a year, if you do it in a straight line fashion, let's say they just do one contract at a time, maybe you know, potentially 4 contracts in a year, and then they could, or I think they can at any point in time have a capacity of doing 3 or 4 at any time. So if you start to look then at, let's say for example, out of that 10%, 5% of the salary as an example. And then you then need to cumulatively add it up. Now it becomes difficult for us to pierce that whole way of them trying to understand how many contracts a contractor has at any point in time. We're now infringing on their rights. It's not the corporate bill which you can't pierce. I think that's the first one I wanted to address that was difficult. The other one, I think, this one, it's an advice we want to give to the shareholder in the presence of the portfolio committee in relation to their presentation. I think the most important thing that must be taken into account is that the rate of progression of women in construction is a function of the dividends we're getting from the procurement policies. And I think the question I would want to advise the department to advise is the one who said, are the tools, the procurement tools, taking us by? Or is this as far as they can take us? And then are there any other interventions that can be employed by the department in terms of dishing out work exclusively for particular designated group? The WPFA does make allowance for procuring departments to have policies that say we will discriminate in a particular fashion. Was my thesis. That is the only way to stretch what the current procurement policies can do. I'm of the view that this is how far the procurement policies can take. And if it is not enough, and the regions that are just reflecting reality, this is how far those policies can take us, what more needs to be done. On the question that was asked on the role of quantity surveys, I think the first part we want to address is that the register is addressing classes of work. It's not addressing the professions that are operating in the value chain of construction. That is the purview of the CDE and professional councils for the various professions. The only register within the CIDD out of the 5 potential in the Act that will deal with this is the Register of Professional Service Providers, where we are still under development. Out of the 5 registers, we've developed 2, and now we're in the stage of developing the professional service provider register, which will then cater for the registration of consultancies that are the trading entities in the market, not the professionals, but the trading entities of professionals in the
its form may be similar or very different from the register of contractors that is still under development. So I think further things I would just want to deal with that are difficult outside of the presentation and the rest of the response.
Thank you very much. I still want to hear from Pilela. Any questions you want to take, but the rest we still want it in writing. Thank you, CEO, what you have said, we also want it in writing, because it's educational. Members of Parliament also go to the stakeholders. So we educate, you know, the expectation, we may not be precise, as you are saying, but if a person is doing his job, you know, 5% will go to this amount. So all this, you know, somewhere here we also become people who help others as well. So if you have it in writing, you know, it's not a clear cut out, but we must all do the bit. We are a developing country. Let's hear who will be there.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
One of the I think when we look at construction activities, and when we say, you know, there's little difference in what the CIDB is presenting over a certain period, perhaps we also need to look at the context, the external environment within which the CIDB is operating, because that environment has not changed much and is actually become worse. The CIDP also has little control over that because we capture what is happening in that environment. I think I did mention that, you know, we have in our country compromised BBB, you know, the legislation, the legislation. And we know the issues around sampling on it. For example, when we started this morning with the when we've seen in companies, black-owned companies, that will capture at CIDB at 100% level. Whenever we go there, you see some white uncles who are always working in the company. They control, they are preparing pricing, they are doing everything. The owner of the company is all over the place, owning and, you know what I mean, organizing other work and associations, politics, and all those things, and never is there doing the work. We've also seen companies that are black owned, but it ends there with the capital outlay by black owners, but the management from the top down, everybody in that company is white. So I think this is a two-way process. We also need as black people to look at our own practices. And I think this also goes a long way to answer Honorable's question when he said, what skills are white companies exposed to that we are not? Because we also seem to just want to be seen as owners and have the names attached to us, but we don't want to be the owners. So there's a lot that we need to do, and I agree it will help to be even across cabinet portfolios and across disciplines and across sectors, because it's not just the construction industry. So there's a lot of ways that we need to do as a country to look at this whole empowerment issue, which is also domestic construction. But I'm not saying there isn't much that we can also do as the CIDB, because for example, for contractors to grow on a level of Chairperson, they must have access to work. And we've identified that, and justifiably I identified here in the portfolio committee today, that there's a lot of advocacy and using the power that we have in terms of legislative mandate to negotiate with client departments, but that is what we can do to try to engage departments more, negotiate with them. But again, as the Chairperson was saying, there are those limitations in terms of the Act about how far we can go. We even tried, for consult already with the state legal advisor and pastor, because it was found that in our act there's nothing to send to payment. So you see, I think we should not be involved in that. And yes, we have presented to the portfolio committee about the review or on the review of the act. But that is still going to be a long process. It's a lengthy process. It's led by public works. We can only contribute to our shareholder. But that's a process that's going to engage and take public participation, all sorts of things, and come to yourself as well to finally. So it's going to be a lengthy process. In the meantime, the CIPD has even submitted a review strategic plan, because we are looking at what we can do with what we have. So Chairperson, we also looked at the amendments to regulations, and those who are working with public works now submitted those to the Minister of Public Works. The board also stopped downgrading. So we wanted that up to June next year. So at least they're giving contractors some slack, and we're then looking, we've looked at putting together the legal framework that supports that, because we don't want to do things that are illegal. But even you asked, for example, about the application or participation in tender and whether that allows rural people to participate. And this thing was mentioned, for example, in Tata last week in the meeting the Minister of Public Works had with contractors in Tata for the Eastern Cape. And suggestions were made by the contractors. They were saying, for example, in KZN, you have tenders that are in Zulu. So that can happen in other regions as well, but we have not even had time to report that to the CIRC on the outcome of that meeting, even to the chairperson. I just sent it abroad to a meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I want Rodney to have 1 minute parting short, and then I'll come to Ibrahim, but there's a lady who also, after Rodney, so we must empower women. The lady who has. That's 1 minute, Rodney, your parting word.
And Chair, thank you. I'm not going to respond to any question here. We will respond in writing. But I really want to take the opportunity. And I really want to take the opportunity to thank all honourable members here. We take your comments, we take your questions very important and importantly, and it's also important for us to have the opportunity to respond to them. Some of them, I do take note of comments which says it's no different to last year or a year before. But in many circles in government, things do take time. I talk from my own experience how a piece of regulation which comes out on Friday has taken 1.5 years just to get to that one stage. But we take your comments, your questions in all seriousness. One of the big challenges around our developmental role hangs around our ability to generate finance for development. And that is that document which comes out on Friday for public comment. That will generate, and the board has approved it in principle, that will generate over the first 5 years as we roll it out over 800 million rand for developmental purposes, of which about 300 million rand will be spent through CIFA or a similar organisation for providing access to credit. I wish these things, as I get older and closer to retirement, I wish these things happened 10 years ago, but we are chipping away, and I take responsibility for many of the things that have taken too long. But thank you for your input, your comments, and opportunity to be here.
Thank you. We'll give the mic to Netflix. Give us.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just thought I'll add one of the issues that you concluded was a state of the entity. I'm not sure we can mention it. Transnet, they came to us to assist them with, they had a lot of formula contractors, I'm not going to call them. And because these contractors could not comply with some of our standards, what they then asked us to do was to reinvent the program, and they are then becoming the like Pharaoh's looking after the context. So we are lenient in some of our approaches, but in terms of developmental issues, so we've allowed that, and we're looking at expanding the program with ESCOM and PROMA as well. So those companies that we find that cost and the finding the budgeting and stuff, we then try to find the homes where they can actually comply and meet the criteria. In so doing, developing their skills and developing the other things that they need to like how they pay their own staff and things like that. So we monitor this, and when Transnet gets back to us because of what they're still saying, we will use that template and transfer that to the other organizations to assist those smaller engineering companies.
Thank you very much, Ibrahim. I will steal your clothes, DG.
Thank you, Chair. It's just a pleasure that the superiors and colleagues have covered everything.
Thank you very much. The mic to DG. We don't have time, just a parting shot.
Thank you, Chair. We will coordinate the responses and provide you with the committee. Come back, we don't hear you. And I'm here for.
Thank you, once again, Chairperson
and honorable members. We will provide the responses that are outstanding to the committee as I need. But we thank you a lot for this very responsive kind of event today. We will just wish that every now and then we share more time during the week as we have. Because it tends to be that we present after presenting the questions every time, even members that wrote it over the years. When it comes to the questions all the time, when you need to get substantive results, it's always this challenge. So I think I just want to urge the members to continue to the method. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you,
Chief.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Department and the CIDP board members. Thank you very much for coming in your numbers and the readiness to give answers. We give you that opportunity to go ahead. And more info in your narrative, we appreciate that we have seen. So we are also happy that there are women, and we also realize they are able to talk, to giving them opportunity to speak to the honorable members. We are happy about that, Chairperson. Yes. We also want to invite you to our lunch is top of the steps, it's not here, it's up here. So we'll be going up, we'll follow the numbers. Maybe before we really adjourn, we want to agree with the honorable members. The next item would be minutes, but we think we must defer it just in the interest of time. Defer it to the next meeting on Tuesday, next Tuesday. If you can remind members to ensure that the minutes that you have given is about 5/10 of minutes, adding to today's minute will be approving maybe 6 to 7/10 of minutes in that meeting of Tuesday. Please bring those minutes we gave you last time, bring them if you can. So we think honorable members were done a bit for the people of South Africa. We thank everybody. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.